Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 192 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder. You can check it out there. You can also check it out on audioboom.com and look at normantranscript.com, see my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can find all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day, or at least I've been on every day of the week. I'll get the scheduling stuff a little bit later. I'm sitting here in Houston with Royce Young.
You're sitting here insanely close to me. You people listening to Locked On Thunder right now, I wish you could have a mental, you could have an actual image of how ridiculous this is. Sitting in a hallway, our knees touching each other, talking into a phone. It's sad.
I think we look great.
Yeah.
I think we look good. The Thunder loss, I didn't bring out a box score.
I've got it memorized.
Yeah, okay. Thunder lost 105-99. They led by as many as 8 points. They were up 7 in the third quarter. They were up 77-72 at the end of the third. Russ came out for 2 minutes and 46 seconds, and the game swung 10 points.
Yeah.
That's the difference, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was the difference the whole series. I mean, I think I wish I could give credit. Somebody tweeted it out. Wasn't you. It might have been Sam Amick. I think somebody did, but it was the on-off numbers for both Westbrook and Harden.
And it was Sam.
Yeah, it was. It was him. I'm looking it up on my phone. Googling. I'm Googling.
I thought you knew it off the top of your head.
I thought I did too.
Yeah.
But I just
Googling.
Filling time.
You're
here.
Twittering now. You're Twittering.
Okay. OKC with Russ on the court for the series plus 15, and that includes Game One, where if you could, I mean, I hate to throw it out, but like Game One really kind of skews those numbers. You take away Game One and it's even more severe. OKC without Russ minus 58. But here's to me where it gets interesting, Fred. Houston with Harden on the floor plus 19. Houston without Harden plus 24. And that's not an indictment on Harden or anything. That's an indictment on what a difference it made for the Thunder specifically to have Westbrook sitting. The Rockets are clearly – I don't care that the on-off numbers are a little bit different for the Rockets, but the Rockets are clearly better with Harden on the floor, supremely better team with him on the floor. But you take Westbrook off and the Thunder just literally fall into – I mean, that's the reason those on-off numbers for Houston are the way they are, is because the Thunder fall off a stinking cliff when Westbrook sits.
Yep, and there's a lot more to that too. Like the defense goes horribly when he's off. Like they have a 142 defensive rating in this series when he didn't play in those 49 or 50 minutes or whatever the heck it was. A lot of that's because a lot of those minutes are when Enes Kanter was on, and he wasn't playable in this series at all, and he only played 3 minutes in this game. Some of that just had to do with just the rest of the bench guys, and you know, Billy playing Samaje and playing Norris Cole and playing Kyle Singler, and then finally in a must-win game in 3-1, he finally says for the first time all year, all right, let's do away with the backup point guard thing.
That's my only criticism, really. I mean, that's my only significant criticism. How would you grade Billy in this series?
C.
And is it the hang-up of the backup point guard situation that brings him down?
That's my number one. But there, honestly, you know what? It might not be my number one. My number one is Taj Gibson playing about 23 minutes a game, 24 minutes a game in the series.
Yeah.
I don't know why Taj Gibson didn't play more. And you know what? Maybe I'm not sitting here saying there's something we don't know about Taj Gibson where they think that he just is not as good if he plays 30 minutes a game. Maybe they have some reason.
He's not that kind of guy, right?
No, he's not. But like, man, that's over an 82 game season. Yeah. Like he played for Tibbs. Dude's played minutes in his life. Right, like he has had games where he's played over 30 minutes. And this was a series for him. Like this was why you had Taj Gibson. You know, he played 24 minutes in this game. And like this is why you had Taj Gibson. This is why you traded for him. Like I feel like Zach Lowe said they were wasting Taj Gibson in his podcast last week, and that was after Game Two when he was talking to Kevin Arnovitz. And I don't know if that's — wasting seems like the wrong word because they did use him, but feels like they didn't use him. They didn't optimize him.
Right. Billy clearly favored going, especially in the second half, going with Grant and Adams together. I mean, Billy clearly wanted Adams on the floor. And, you know, I think that, to me, and this was a discussion point coming into the series, is that, and we did see some Grant and Gibson together in the front court, but I don't think we saw it enough. You know, I think that so much attention is on Billy and how he managed the series and I think that Donovan did make some serious mistakes in the series. At the same time, he was coaching against a better team, and it is difficult. I mean, your margin for error as a coach is so limited in that way that when you are coaching against a better, deeper roster, and your only true hope is to play a guy 48 minutes that can't play 48 minutes, it's tough. I mean, and I think that, you know, you asked Billy about it before game three, I think, or game four, about using the first couple games to kind of build some evidence and figure out what's going to work and what's not going to work. And it seemed to me after game three that Billy did kind of zero in on some things. The Abrines McDermott lineup. It seemed like he was getting closer in the same way that he did against the Spurs and against the Warriors to kind of last postseason to kind of figure some things out. But at a certain point, when another team is just better than you, and that's significantly better than you, when a certain player goes off the floor, you're just handcuffed. And I don't know that even if Billy would have coached in a series, I don't know if it would. It might have got it to six games, but I don't know that the Thunder had much hope in this thing.
I agree with that. I think that's fair. I mean, a coach, for the most part, like a coach is not swinging a series from losing in five to winning in seven.
Right.
Like, that's not something that a coach is going to do. I just think there were certain things that weren't necessarily optimized. And, like, you know, maybe they let go of a lot of leads in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just the bench. I mean, they failed to capitalize in the fourth quarter in a lot of ways. And, you know, they could have won four of these games. Not that they should have won. There's no game that they lost I look at and think they should have won that game, except for maybe game two, where I think game two they probably should have won game two. But the other ones, it's like, you know what? They definitely could have, but Houston's the better team. And a lot of the time, just the better team is the one that ends up winning a lot of those games. So I'm not saying they should have won any of those. But you look back and you think, you know, this was a close five-game series.
And you know, I know that there are a lot of fans that everybody gets frustrated when a season ends, and there's only one team and one fan base that's not incredibly frustrated at the end of a season. It's unusual.
The Nets.
The Nets, that's when we established that. It's unusual for the Thunder to go out in the first round, but this is a different era of Thunder basketball here. And, you know, I think if you're a Thunder fan, even though it was a five-game series, like you said, Fred, this series was extremely close. And if I'm a Thunder fan, I would be encouraged with the way the team played, because it says they're not that far off. In year one, with a flawed roster, with specialists all over the floor, with the clear and present issues that they have when Westbrook sits, they were scratching the surface of beating a 55-win, very good Houston Rockets team. One of the five or six best teams in the entire NBA. The Thunder were within a handful of plays in a couple of games from pushing this to seven, potentially, from even maybe being up, like you said, 3-1 or something. So I think that, you know, this team has clear issues. They've got to get better. They've got to adjust some things. They've got a big summer ahead. But I don't think that you should walk away from this saying, oh, my gosh, the Thunder are in a mess right now. What are they going to possibly do?
Did I introduce you, or did you just interrupt me?
I don't know. Can we go back and we start over?
I might need to.
By the way, I'm John Hamm. This is my 15th appearance.
So this is Royce Young of ESPN. I may not have intro'd you.
You might have. I don't know if you did.
It's too late, and I don't want to edit it, so I think I'm just going to
let it fly. This makes it good.
Yeah.
I'm enough of a recurring guest that people could probably – it's like a cold open.
Yeah. That's the cold open. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Royce Young.
Yeah,
that's what we're doing. What should Thunder fans be thinking right now, heading into the offseason? I mean, is there a point to overanalyze this? Should they have a good taste in their mouth, a bad taste in their mouth?
They should have a good taste. Look, this was an extremely successful season, and that's something I asked Russ post-game, and I think he even kind of let his guard down to even say that this was a good season. And people have to rewind back to the way you felt July 4th at about 11 a.m., and the franchise is set on fire, and you know, everything feels like it's going to crumble down on you. You get a good day a month later when Russell Westbrook signs an extension. But still, there's so many unknowns and so many question marks coming into the year. While a lot of people, like even me, I think I had the Thunder fifth seed, 48 wins, because I believed in Westbrook and I thought the roster was in a good place. But there was a lot of skepticism about what this team would actually look like and what Westbrook could do. look what Thunder fans got to enjoy. In some ways, this was the most exciting season this fan base has seen with what Russell Westbrook did on a nightly basis. There's a roadmap ahead. This roster can be in a place where they're going to probably be in the postseason next year. There's a way to improve it. To me, and this is the thing that you kind of pointed out, Fred, near the buzzer, at the buzzer, the question is Russell Westbrook again and what he does.
People got so annoyed with me for bringing that up.
It is the question staring the franchise in the face.
No one's talking about it.
And I think, it, honestly, in some ways it's fair to not really obsess over it because, like, look at it this way. Like with Durant, nobody doesn't assume that Durant is not committed to the Warriors long term. He could be a free agent this summer and go somewhere else. But it was a kind of a practical move that Durant made, getting to the 10-year vet, max there. Westbrook did the same thing with his. So I think Westbrook's – it was a commitment to the franchise last summer. But if he turns this down and, you know, I think he would be the highest paid player in the NBA, if I'm not mistaken, or he would be on the current highest contract.
You're not mistaken.
So if he turns that down after he wins most likely MVP in Oklahoma City, alarm bells got to go off. Because then he's got one season left of guaranteed contract, 2017-18, with the Thunder. Then he's got a player option in the summer of 2019. And at that point, you gotta worry if you're the front office. I mean, if he turns it down, it circles all the way back around into, are they going to have to trade Russell Westbrook?
It circles into a statement.
Right.
Into they have to trade Russell
Westbrook.
Because
there's no tangible reason for him to turn it down.
Well, he's been with this organization for 9 years. They've had 9 years to get him to stay. And I'm not trying to be foreboding. If I had to make a guess, you know, my guess would be he'd sign it, if only for financial reasons. But I also am not in the business of predicting what that guy specifically is going to do. I would rather predict the mentality of any other person that I've ever met in my entire life than try to get into his head, because I can ask him a tough question and he can give me a great answer. I can ask him an easy question. He could look at me like I just insulted
him.
But
I think he's transparent in the way of what he is, like what his motives are.
And he's a straightforward person.
So, you know, and I'm not taking any kind of shots at anybody here, but like Kevin Durant operated differently going into his free agent. You know, he kept it kind of close to the vest, was kind of, a little bit elusive. And, you know, kind of kept people on their toes about what he was actually thinking. And Westbrook, it doesn't really handle things that way. So I don't think you can't compare one just because Durant did something, Westbrook did something. But if he does turn it down, you do have to wonder if that's Westbrook essentially saying, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about the future of this team. I'm not sure about what I want to do. And if you're Sam Presti, you've already been burned once and you lost a franchise player for literally nothing, you can't do it again. I mean, Presti is the steward of the franchise. And if Westbrook's not going to commit to them long term, the best move for the franchise is to utilize him as an asset and, you know, go get something in return. Like, my complete expectation is that Westbrook signs it this summer. We have to wait and see. You just have to wait and see.
Just do a sign and trade deal for Kevin Durant.
Wouldn't that be something?
Send him to Golden State.
I mean, look, has it ever happened? Has a reigning MVP ever been traded the following season?
Oh, that's a good question.
I'm thinking back probably the last six or seven MVPs, and I certainly can't think of one at that point.
I can't either. I'm thinking other sports too.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't happen.
I'm trying to think of, like, the Marlins traded someone. Kevin Brown win a Cy Young?
Yeah, I think Charles Johnson did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Charles Johnson won MVP.
Yeah.
Edgar Renteria. I'm trying to think of my Marlins history here.
Yeah.
I could Google it for us. We could Google it.
No, that's a good point.
But look, I mean, Westbrook's future is, to me, it's the MacGuffin here, right? You know, it's the thing that's like kind of – it's going to hang over the franchise until it's done. You can talk about Andre Robertson's future. Taj Gibson said he wanted to stay in Oklahoma City, but we'll see. It's about Westbrook and what Westbrook does. And I checked on it today because I was kind of curious. I was thinking, well, maybe Westbrook turns it down because he would it would be kind of a break for the franchise, you know, about like when that extension would actually kick in so he could make less money next year and then let it, you know, or whatever, you know, if that makes any sense. But that's not the case. So there's no financial incentive, no giving the Thunder a break or anything. If he turns it down, then he's He's basically saying, I am unsure of my future in Oklahoma City.
I wonder what they're going to end up doing this offseason, because they don't have that much cap flexibility. Mm-hmm. They actually really don't have any. But they have some guys who they could potentially move. Maybe they could move a Kanter contract. Maybe they could move an Oladipo contract.
Mm-hmm. I think Oladipo is a tradable player. I mean, I think draft night is a big night for the Thunder again. And, you know, the way Presti has done it is that he has gotten younger and younger and younger. And I mean, you know, Fred, you talk to everybody in the organization. They are so proud of how young they are. And
Oladipo's probably more tradable after draft night, though.
Right.
Because on draft night, you move his salary. It's his rookie-scale deal.
That's true. That's
you move him after, you can get $21 million of,
that's true.
Of value back.
So, I mean, so, yeah, some things, some fireworks could go off this summer. But, like, at some point, you can't continue to get younger. You can't continue to build assets. At some point, you have to, you know, you look at the impact that guys made, like Eric Gordon and Lou Williams in this series. I mean, this is what Kevin Durant wanted the franchise to do, and they failed on doing because they had a set way of wanting to operate, is that Durant wanted veteran players like a Lou Williams or a Eric Gordon, and the Thunder didn't always come through with those guys. They got some, Caron Butler, Derek Fisher, but not the true impact guys he was always craving. Westbrook's not really the kind of guy that necessarily is, you know, begging Presti to do that sort of stuff, but at the same time, you know, it's, if you're going to move away Enes Kanter and go get a lottery pick or whatever it might be, I don't know how that, you know, edges you forward into next season. So, you know, the Thunder got a – fans want Paul George. Fans want Jimmy Butler. Yeah, good luck. It's not going to happen. But they've got some moves to make, and Presti's got a long track record of doing it.
We barely talked about this game. We barely talked about this series.
Is it even really about the game anymore? At this point? Like, I feel like that's the way end of the season always is. It's like – what happens?
Once it ends, who cares about?
And then you look forward
how to it happens.
I mean, look, they
should they worry? Should they worry about Enes Kanter? Should they, like, Enes Kanter had a really good regular season, yeah. But this is now back to back elimination series, like in back to back seasons where Enes Kanter had really good, like top five, six man, like one of the five best six men in the NBA 2 years in a row, right? He's had really good top five, six man regular seasons. And in elimination series, he's been unable to play. And maybe Donovan has tried to. I think you have three. But don't, you know, Donovan has tried at times to wedge him in and has tried to force him in, and it hasn't worked. And in elimination games, in times where Donovan said, you know, when those are his most honest moments, you know, he talks about, we have lots of confidence in Norris Cole and lots of confidence in Samaje Christen. And then the last three games, Samaje is inactive. And the final game, Norris Cole gets 2 seconds of play in the final 2 seconds of the game. You know, like, those are his most honest moments. Those are when, regardless of what he's saying, those are when you can tell, okay, here's when his back is against the wall, what Billy Donovan believes. Kind of makes you wonder, he's thought about it, and we're never going to get a straight answer on it, but it does kind of make you wonder, like, why not, why wasn't this gone to a little bit earlier? And if that's something that they're asking themselves internally, whether Billy Donovan's asking himself, whether, you know, the organization is reflectively asking itself, whether Donovan and the organization together, which is the most likely scenario, and you have to figure they will, because they're very evaluative people and they're smart people inside this organization, and they're very self-reflective people, and they're going to be able to do that, makes you wonder. Back-to-back postseason series now, Golden State last year and Houston this year, Kanter wasn't playable against those sorts of elite offenses in the playoffs. Makes you wonder if they want to see if they can unload him somewhere
else. Yeah, and
it's
tough because, you know, Kanter is such kind of a, you know, he loves the organization, he loves Russell. He seems to be like kind of a Westbrook player. You know, he can live with what Westbrook provides. And
he does not care about coming off the bench.
No.
I wonder if in other organizations he would.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying that he definitely would.
Well, he clearly had an issue with his playing time in Utah, and he's come to Oklahoma City and in some ways played less and less of a role.
He just doesn't care.
Because he loves Russell. He loves the franchise.
Loves Steven.
You know, yeah, he's kind of entrenched himself into the organization. But like you said, Fred, I mean, when you're talking about what's in the best interest of the roster – you know, it's an interesting thing with Kanter, because against the Spurs, he was an integral piece. You know, the Stash Brothers combo lineup, that's what bullied the Spurs down and, you know, really was a big part of winning a couple of games in that series. When they traded for Kanter and then when they extended Kanter, he was always seen as like this luxury piece. I mean, he was like, you know, you're signing a guy. They didn't have, you know, salary cap functions to go out and get players, so he was a young player on a controllable contract. And, you know, they were willing to bust into the luxury tax for a guy like Enes Kanter because, like, look at what you got. You know, he was somebody that – he was a luxury item to the Thunder. They didn't mind playing him 16 minutes in a game and paying him his big contract. But now things are different. That was on a Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook team. This is a different type of team. And when you're looking at assets that you could move to maybe get other things, like you said, does Enes Kanter feels like a Westbrook type of player, but it's tough to have a guy sitting on your bench making $70 million that you play 3 minutes in an elimination game.
Right. And for that to be a kind of consistent thing, right, in terms of how you're going out in your season. And Kanter can get better, but he's
never... played the Grizzlies the next series? Enes Kanter could be one of the most valuable pieces on the floor.
Spurs, too.
Yeah, Spurs. I mean,
if they had somehow won this series and they go up against
Clippers,
San Antonio.
There's a number of teams that Enes Kanter could have been an effective player against, but certain teams, he's just not, as Billy said, not playable.
Yeah. Did Billy say that?
Or appeared to say.
I never saw a clip of that going viral at all.
Yeah.
Never saw that. Royce, anything else? Anything else we should be talking about?
No. Good season, Fred.
Yeah, good season.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We made it. We did it.
Well, I got to give a shout out to the listeners. I can't believe that like a legitimate amount of people listen to this podcast.
That's sad. It's sad and embarrassing.
It is. It's so sad. And hey, it's after midnight. This is the exact 1 year anniversary of me moving to.
I'm clapping.
Me coming to Oklahoma, taking this job. So it's.
And here you sit in a hallway, sadly touching knee to knee with me. At 12:20 a.m.
Touching knee to knee with you is never sad. Come on.
I would never touch another man's
knee. But thank you to everyone who's listened this year. Don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow. I'm going to be on for the rest of the week at least, and I'll still be on after that and that kind of stuff. At some point, I'm going to move to a not Monday through Friday format, but that I'll let you know in advance of that. It's not going to randomly be sprung. I will be back tomorrow. You can find Royce on Twitter at Royce Young.
That's right. That's correct. Good job. You got it right.
He writes about the Thunder, yeah, and he tweets about the Thunder. And sometimes, as I learned today on Twitter, he'll call people who follow him idiots.
Did I?
Yeah.
Sometimes I get a little sassy.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned that today. That made me happy. I was really excited to see you call someone
an
idiot.
What did I call somebody an idiot for?
Someone said something stupid about Billy Donovan, and you said, because I'm not an idiot.
So that's not me calling him an idiot.
Yeah, you're calling him an idiot.
Potentially.
You're calling him an idiot because he said that he was doing it, and then you said, because I'm not an idiot. I don't think you said because I'm not an idiot. I think you said because I'm not an idiot.
That's right.
I think that's what you said. Anyway, you can...
I said moron. Thank you very much.
Oh, moron. Sorry. Same thing.
It was hashtag fire Donovan. Let's get it started, guys. And I said, nah, because I'm not a total moron.
Oh, where does Taj Gibson laughing hysterically as Russell Westbrook rants about Patrick Beverley? Where does that rank among your favorite, like, final moments of the year things? You've covered every year of the Thunder.
He put both hands over his face because he was laughing so hard.
It was, like, kind of precious.
It was good.
It was hilarious. Yeah. It was so great. It's on Eric Horn's Twitter feed. I retweeted that. It's Russell ranting about...
I assume it's going to be multiple places.
Oh, that thing's going to be all over. It's Russell ranting about Patrick Beverley saying his first team all-defense and Taj Gibson up there on the podium with him just unable to keep it together because he's laughing so hard at Russell's rant.
Right.
All right. So
we did it.
We did it. You can contact me on Twitter at Fred Katz, F-R-E-D-K-A-T... F-R-E-D-K-A...
F-R-T-D-P-T... L-L-D-E.
There you go. F-R-E-D-K-A-T-Z. I still know how to spell my name, amazingly enough. Hit me up at lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can check out normantranscript.com, see my blog, Thunder Road. That's still going to be updated. I'm still going to be writing. I'm still going to be doing lots of stuff. I am going to be taking off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but I'll be back. I'm taking a weekend, Royce. I never take weekends. I'm excited to take a weekend. I'm excited to take a weekend, but I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, Lockdown Thunder is locking up.